This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for August the 18th, 2022. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper, with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending August the 18th. Reading today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I am Noel Thorpe-Tracy. The headlines today are Drought, Chalk Stream Dries Out, Concern Over Army Base Plans, and Boomtown Finishes As Temperatures Soar. So, may we have the first story, please, Daphne?
Yes, and it's the one about the chalk stream drying out. The worst drought in decades has seen a Hampshire chalk stream dry up in places. The River Dever is at its lowest level in many years, and the pond at Stoke Charity, fed by the river, is also at its most empty in at least 20 years. Where usually there is water, ducks and fish, today there is just mud and stones. Its owner, Ruth Guy of Stoke Charity, said, "We have lived here 21 years. The pond is fed by two deep boreholes that are now a foot below the surface and have not flowed for 3 to 4 months. The pond is drying out. In 2005, the pond was very low, but the river has never dried. The river never dried in 1976. There was still a trickle. The impact on wildlife can be stark. Miss Guy said she had recently found a 23-inch long dead pike and witnessed kingfishers desperately attempting to find food in the mud where usually they dive into the stream. She lays the blame at the door of the water companies. The water companies are increasingly abstracting from the river, she said. It is an easy way to get good, clean water. The river does not stand a chance if there is a drought and over-abstraction. She said she sometimes notices a definite drop, when usually the river levels rise or fall gradually, and questions whether that is because of abstraction. Parts of the Dever Valley are a site of special scientific interest. It flows into the River Test. Hampshire chalk streams, such as the Test and Itchen, are highly unusual and only seen abroad in parts of France and New Zealand. Lucy Dowson, chairman of Wanston Parish Council, which covers Stoke Charity, said, "I have been here 25 years and have never seen the pond so dry. There is no doubt in my mind that this is the impact of global warming. It will have a detrimental effect on wildlife." Southern Water have been asked about water abstraction, and Hampshire Wildlife Trust have been approached over the environmental impact. A spokesman for the Dever Society said, "We are very concerned at the low levels of the Dever, one of the sources of the internationally important River Test, and that increasing drought episodes due to climate change make it imperative that we safeguard this important resource by reducing extraction and consumption." And that's illustrated by a picture of the pond at Stoke Charity, which is literally no more than a very large puddle. There is so much mud, rubble, everything around the sides. It's a very sorry sight.
Thank you. Nick?
Concerns over army base plans. Major redevelopment plans that will turn part of a redundant army base on the edge of Winchester into a business park has sparked fears for wildlife from campaigners. Landowner, the Church Commissioners, has joined with Legal and General Investment Management and developer Gisborne to develop Bushfield Camp. They envisage a 1 million square foot regeneration of the camp, which they say has the potential to attract major interest from sectors including life science, academia, media and the health sector. But local campaigner Beau Priestley said the plans threatened to destroy areas that, although brownfield, had become an important wildlife habitat. She said, "We will be losing a significant brownfield site that is already diverse in plants and wildlife. In return for more traffic, buildings and parking, all of which will affect the surrounding area." The Bushfield saga has rumbled on and on, but what local people really care about is preserving the wider area's unique setting and wildlife as an integrated whole. This is the last remaining wedge of the unspoiled downland that used to wrap around Winchester. It in fact extends to a glorious 75 hectares, if we include Whiteshute Ridge and Bushfield Down, already much-loved recreational resources, and two HCC-tenanted fields, which could easily be added to the mix. It's far too precious for a piecemeal approach. The camp has been designated in the Winchester City Local Plan for Employment. In the 1980s, it was proposed as location for a Tesco superstore, which was eventually built in Winnell. It extends to about 105 acres, with around half to be developed, leaving a significant part to be maintained as publicly accessible and biodiverse green space. Bushfield was a training base until 1971, and some of the military buildings and parade ground remain. Gordon Aitchison, Director of Investment and Development for LGIM Real Assets, said, "We are delighted to be involved in this once-in-a-generation opportunity to deliver an exemplar development in Winchester." John Godbold, Chairman of Badger Farm Parish Council, said, "We would welcome some development on this brownfield site if it does not affect the neighbouring downland. Our main concerns are access onto Badger Farm Road, sympathetic low-rise buildings and adequate parking. Previous plans have included footpaths to St Cross, which would have made Badger Farm a de facto car park for any development."
Thank you. Frieda.
Boomtown finishes as temperatures soar. Boomtown capped off a week of partying with two spectacular closing ceremonies on Sunday. The festival, which started on Wednesday, August the 10th, drew in huge crowds who were keen to see the likes of Cool and the Gang, Gentlemen's Dub Club and Melody. Returning to the Matterley estate with a fresh storyline for the first time since COVID, Chapter 1, the gathering saw thousands pitch up tents for the five-day bash. No stranger to adverse weather conditions, Boomtown had to contend with highs of 33°C over the course of the weekend, with a Met Office amber warning in place for extreme heat. People armed with water pistols, fans and various other liquid dispensers came together to cool each other down. Some who couldn't hack the heat packed up early and left the festival before the closing night. Those who stayed were treated to final performances at the two flagship stages, Grand Central and Origin. The festival then finished as it started, with organisers once again delivering a powerful environmental message as they aim to hit their target of net zero by 2025. Becky Buckle, aged 22, from London, stayed for the entirety of the final day. Having originally planned to attend the cancelled 2020 event, she instead opted to defer her ticket for this year rather than claiming a refund. "It feels like this has been a long time coming," she said. "Originally, I was in two minds as to whether or not I'd be here, as I first got my ticket 2 years ago. But I'm so glad I came." While Becky has been enjoying many of the eclectic artists on offer, she said she has also been spending plenty of time exploring Boomtown's alternative offerings. The festival hosts a range of activities which attendees can enjoy during the day, including yoga classes and wooden spoon carving. Former dancer Jade Shaw was booked to deliver a workshop on astral projection, a supposed self-initiated out-of-body experience while sleeping. She has been teaching professionally for 7 years and says she first started having experiences with astral projection as a child, later studying this transpersonal psychology at university. I do what I do because I want to show people how to astral project for self-transformation and self-growth, she said. This is a recognized definition in psychology. It's feeling like you are separating or leaving your body and being able to look back at it, lying there while you float around in a ghost-like way. Now, this piece is accompanied by 2 photographs which show the event and the buildings which have been put up specially to host all these people coming along and listening and doing. And there are indeed an enormous number of people, and 2 towers and stages. It is a huge thing.
Thank you. And that concludes the headlines for this week. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Now we will proceed with the death notices, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Belgarum, editorial comment, first person, and then we will continue with items of general news. So here are the death notices. Bolger, Susan Bolger, passed away suddenly at home on Sunday the 7th of August 2022. Digweed, Anthony James Digweed, passed away peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital on 1st of August, 2022, aged 77 years. Cherit, June Cherit, peacefully at home on the 3rd of August, aged 75 years. And Lumsden, Lady Sheila, née Daniels Lumsden, died peacefully at home on the 8th of August, 2022, aged 91 years. And now, Christian comment is read by Daphne.
And it comes from the Reverend James Wymark, and it's entitled Ponderings of a Priest, Part 2. If you had to point to something you had faith in, I wonder where you might start. These days, it seems as if there's not much we can actually put our complete confidence and trust in anymore. Holidays without delays and cancellations, politicians who keep to the rules they make, energy bills that don't cost the earth. All of that is on top of life's constant tests of our faith and patience as such, but of course not limited to our friends and family's ability to regularly ruffle our feathers, or the fading hope that our children will stop declaring that they need the potty en route to their grandparents halfway down the M3 when we've just passed the last service station. We'd be forgiven for feeling that we had no one to rely on other than ourselves. Only our feelings aren't all that reliable either. Our mood and emotions will rise and fall, and according to the latest studies, anxiety levels are exploding, with cases trebling in young adults and increasing across the board in both men and women under the age of 55. Perhaps we might restore our faith in faith, to begin to see it not as a blind leap, but a confident step based on evidence. Our feelings, and sadly often others, will let us down, as we are all human after all. But God won't. We can have faith in God to always be with us, and we are encouraged to come just as we are. It's not about what we do or what we have achieved. God's promise is to be at our side no matter what, throughout all our frustrations, disappointments, and anxieties. I am certain of that because I read those promises in the Bible. I experienced them for myself, and I see God's presence and creativity in my life, as well as in the world beyond it. The recent images of the cosmos revealed to the world from the James Webb Space Telescope have shown us the deepest and sharpest images of the distant universe to date, according to NASA. Unveiling huge numbers of stars and entire galaxies, almost too beautiful and numerous to count, they have enabled us to look back more than 13 billion years into our past, and are the farthest that humanity has ever seen in both time and distance, closer to the dawn of time and the edge of the universe as we know it. Such glimpses of the vastness and variety of the universe and our known world might prompt us to place our trust in ourselves, conceding that we are a very small, insignificant part of a seemingly infinite universe, so we'd better jolly well look after number one. Or they might lead us to take a step towards finding out why, if any of this God is with us stuff is true, he would want to have anything to do with me or you. So what or who do you have faith in? And that's from the Reverend James Y. Mark, curate at Christ Church, Winchester.
And there are 9 letters this week, beginning with one read by Nick.
Yeah, yes, sorry. The title for this one is Boomtown Questions. This is a wrong that must be put right. I live within half a mile or a short walk from the water source of the River Itchen. I ride past it on my bicycle every day to collect my newspaper from the Cheriton village stores. I am banned from using water. But Boomtown, a commercial organisation, and the tens of thousands of visitors, mostly from outside the local area, non-residential users, are not. Global warming and its impact on local water supplies, both now and in the future, is yet another reason why I object to Boomtown and to the latest related South Downs National Park initiative. It highlights the appalling state of our local infrastructure and lack of will or a meaningful plan, which includes dates, to rectify the situation by politicians both local and national. Internet. No fibre to the property, and both upload and download speeds slow and prone to regular outages. Mobile phone coverage. We live in a null. No 5G or 4G coverage locally. No 3G or voice coverage outside the house. We are the forgotten rural community. And that letter is from David Templeman, Hinton Ampner, Oldsford.
Now, this letter leads on from what Nick has just read. It is again about Boomtown. I am sure the organisers of Boomtown raise a huge amount of money from ticket revenue and the income from licensed bars which are open until 4 a.m. But what consideration is there for residents living nearby? The Boomtown website majors on the word respect. Respect for the environment features highly. But what about respect for the local residents who have to put up with the disruption and noise created by this festival? Perhaps our local council should strongly oppose a permanent planning licence for this event, once the temporary approval lapses. And this letter is from Mrs. S. Smith, Northbrook Avenue, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
And the next letter is a change of topic, headed Energy Costs, and it comes from Bob Whitmarsh. As household energy costs rise relentlessly, the largest bills in many homes are for heating. A recent investigation of the amount of energy used for heating in Winchester District, based on data in the public domain, came to a surprising conclusion. It found that civil parishes in which most homes rely on oil and LPG, that's liquid petroleum gas, for heating, use on average more than twice as much energy per person as in Winchester City. Although such parishes are home to only 13% of the population, the greenhouse gases they emit represent 23% of the district's emissions from heating. The main explanation for this conclusion appears to be that these parishes, without access to mains gas, contain more large detached houses and fewer terraced houses. The first steps to using less energy for heating homes should always be adding insulation and draft proofing. But then energy suppliers need to explain why they charge so much for electricity, which is increasingly sourced from almost free wind and solar. Surely the time has come to dump fossil fuel sources of energy used for heating, such as oil, LPG, and even natural gas. And for those who can afford it, to switch to a heat pump, because they only use electricity. This will not only dramatically reduce emissions, but assuming the price of electricity will eventually fall relative to gas, will also save money. And that's from Bob Whitmarsh, Berwick Avenue, Wick, Winchester.
And the next letter is about water supply. When I came to work in the Hampshire County Planning Department some 50 years ago, I seem to remember that as part of the county plan, a site for a water reservoir had been identified and safeguarded somewhere between Winchester and Southampton. At that time, climate change was not normally talked about, but it seemed prudent planning to prepare for a future that would require more water to cope with population growth. It would also require a large capital sum at an appropriate time in the water company's budget. For some reason, this seemed to get abandoned. Now that regular hot summers capable of creating drought conditions seem to be a reality, it would be more difficult to find a suitable site, as it is well known that people are loath to see their bit of the countryside sacrificed, even though a well-designed reservoir on a suitable site could be a visual and practical asset. What plans have our water companies got for long-term water storage to protect a complex ecosystem of our lovely chalk rivers and supply the public need for water in drought conditions? Have they budgeted for their implementation? That letter's from Andrew Rutter, St John's Road, Winnell, Winchester.
This letter is headed Online Woes, and I think many of us will be able to identify with it. My age, 91, has finally caught up with me. For technical reasons, to avoid the closure of our two business banking accounts, when I or my wife die, we need two new accounts, this time with our four children, two of whom live abroad. If our accounts close, until probate is obtained, none of our quite substantial rental income will come in. No standing orders or direct debits will be processed, and our executors will have to claw back many tens of thousands of pounds of rents. Services will probably be cut off, and our employees unpaid. Opening up new bank accounts now has to be done online. First, create a new password and get the system to remember it. Then answer dozens of questions. With great difficulty, because closing an unfinished page to look up information kills it. Everything entered has disappeared when I restart. By the time I got onto my fourth child, who lives in Spain, I knew what to expect. When he had moved to his present address, where and from when he had lived previously, date of birth, dual nationalities, etc., etc., only to fall at the final hurdle because he has no UK mobile phone. Fearing that all entered would be lost, I saved the page by inventing a number. Having spent hours on my computer, I was then asked to sign a piece of paper, photograph it, and enter it into the system. Something I have never been able to do, so I gave up. It was late. Today, I tried again, only to find that a new password had to be created and a special code number obtained on my phone. Needless to say, after several attempts, I have failed to get past this hurdle. I have now offered to drive to any branch within 50 miles to give our signatures. But all the bank could offer is someone to call me in 10 days. I was visited at home by two senior bankers when I first opened the accounts. The process took minutes. Plus, I received a jolly good letter opener. That letter is from Keith Webb, Quarry Road, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
This letter is headed Wartime Speech. In the Hampshire Chronicle of the 11th of August, there is a mistake which a little research would have shown to be a myth. Eisenhower had indeed been preparing his D-Day speech since early in 1944. It was recorded on May the 28th for broadcasting on the morning of the invasion, which was then postponed from May the 30th or June the 1st. The troops, however, were locked down in their marshalling camps on May the 26th and stayed so until they finally moved down to the embarkation ports and hards. The recording of the speech was delivered to the BBC by military courier on June the 6th, shortly before the announcer, John Snagg, gave the news of the first landings at 9:32 a.m. Eisenhower's recorded speech followed immediately. The text of the speech was also kept secret to American and Allied servicemen until the last minute. Some 175,000 copies of a leaflet were printed, and these were only distributed on the eve of D-Day, coinciding with the early dispatch of the plane loads of parachutists and the departure of the many groups in gliders on their way to Normandy. Eisenhower's speech, the orders of the day, was a very closely guarded secret, which was certainly not announced in advance to a few thousand troops at Chesford Head. And that comes from John Holder, Colebrook Place, Winchester.
And the next letter's about another of Eisenhower's speeches. I hope any future memorial to Dwight D. Eisenhower includes his farewell speech as US President in 1961, when he warned of the corrupting influence of the military-industrial complex. It's a pity that subsequent US leaders didn't take heed, and regrettable that, unlike Harold Wilson, who resisted any involvement in Vietnam, more recent UK leaders supported disastrous US interventions, notably in Afghanistan and Iraq. Now, as peace campaigners face being criminalised along with trade unionists and protesters demanding action on the cost of living and the environment, we're facing the prospect of another sabre-rattling PM in the shape of tank-topping Liz Truss. I was born in the middle of World War II. I certainly don't fancy dying in a World War III. And that letter's from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Fulford, Winchester.
Oh dear, now on a lighter note, this letter is headed Lionesses. We at Solent Sports would like to send congratulations to the England women's football team on their historic and inspiring Euro 2022 win. I, like many people, watched all their games. The team played with pride and passion. I'm sure they will inspire a generation of girls to take up the sport. If you feel inspired by the women's Euros, then contact Hampshire to find your nearest football group. Being part of a team can give you a sense of belonging and help you with mental and physical health. I took up football with Solent Sports last year. We have both men and women playing on the same pitch. Everyone at Solent Sports Football is very supportive. If you are not sure if you can play, then feel free to come along and watch and take a look for yourself. All our sessions are also on Facebook, or feel free to contact us at www.solentsports.com. And this letter is from Mark Rowe, Taplings Close, Week, Winchester.
And a letter headed King's Walk Revamp Good News. During these times of uncertainty, it is good news that King's Walk is to be revamped. Chronicle, August the 4th. Such projects will not only improve the appearance of this 1970s structure, it will create employment through incentivising companies to take advantage of such a facility, with its planned mix of areas for shops, indoor markets, outdoor and leisure facilities. Winchester is a magnet for enterprise and attracts many tourists from not only the UK but overseas, and of course local residents and visitors. Let us hope this project does proceed and that it generates positive cross-party cooperation, which undoubtedly accelerates the fruition of such projects. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And that's the last letter. And thanks to all the correspondents. You can contact the Hampshire Chronicle at any time by writing to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL, or by phone on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Now we're on to Belgarum. There's one quite heartwarming item in Belgarum this week, and Nick is going to read it.
Yes, it's about 20 years for Katie at Sainsbury's. One of Sainsbury's longest serving employees is celebrating 20 years with the company. Katie Williams is celebrating with her parents, Julie and David Williams, after reaching 20 years employment at the Badger Farm Superstore. She was presented with a badge commemorating the milestone. Katie, 36, who has autism, lives at home with her mum and dad. She said, "I love my job very much and like chatting with the customers. The staff and managers are very kind to me, especially Lou, Mel and Brian. I have a lovely new boss called Stuart too." Her mother, Julie, said that her and David were incredibly proud of their daughter and thanked Sainsbury's and the great staff at both the Middle Brook Street branch in the city centre and Badger Farm for the support and kindness they had shown throughout the past two decades. Julie said, "We are so proud of Katie being able to have work and to do her own job. She's well liked by the community around the store, and she's so happy to have reached 20 years. She said Katie always liked the supermarket since a young age. She had always been a big fan of the TV show Supermarket Sweep growing up, and regularly used to fill up my trolley on our weekly visits to Badger Farm. The things I used to find in there. Being quite a little character, the staff at Sainsbury's quickly got to know Katie, and in March 1996, they decided to buy and customise a shopping trolley for her, which she was presented with by the then store manager and beauty assistant. Judy said she was touched by the gesture and Katie was delighted with the gift. When Katie, who has a twin sister, turned 16, there was only one place she wanted to work, Sainsbury's. Originally, I used to go with Katie to work. She used to do an hour a week in the Middlebrook Street branch, said Julie. She was so happy to be there, and she did so well, that eventually her hours started increasing, and we found that I didn't need to stay there with her throughout the day. It did her independence so much good, commuting to and from work on the bus or cycling with David. Eventually, Katie was transferred to Badger Farm, where she has worked ever since. We just wanted to say thank you to Sainsbury's. They've treated Katie brilliantly over the years. It's a credit to her. She's well liked and well known, and her family couldn't be prouder of her. Stuart Purdy, manager of Sainsbury's Badger Farm, said, "It only seems like yesterday that I can remember Katie completing the supermarket sweep around the store as a young girl. Who would have known then she would go on to complete 20 years' service at Badger Farm Sainsbury's? Well done, Katie. Keep up the great work." And there's two pictures of Katie attached to that. Some of you may well know her anyway if you visit the Sainsbury's store. One with her looking delighted holding her 20 years service certificate, and another picture taken back in 1996 with the, by the looks of it, her mother and the store manager at the time, and the shopping trolley that she must have done her sweep around with.
That's lovely. Very nice.
And now Frieda's going to read this week's first person.
This is written by Khalid Aziz and is entitled "The Only Language." It's 1980, and yours truly is standing in a section of 2 metre diameter concrete pipe, peering into a TV lens, announcing the commencement of the Yorkshire Water Grid. The Yorkshire Water Authority had been moved to initiate this megabucks piece of infrastructure after the notoriously dry summer of 1976. TV showed pictures of dried up rivers and narrow boats beached in dewatered canals. As now, a full-scale drought had been declared. The problem was not that the country as a whole didn't have enough water, but that it was in the wrong places. In 1980, 9 years before privatisation, Yorkshire Water executives were in no doubt as to where their priorities lay. Fundamental was providing a reliable supply of potable water to the people who paid their bills, and therefore their wages. Fast forward 3 decades to 2012, and a couple of years after moving to St Marybourne, I am sitting in a packed meeting in the village hall. Angry residents are talking and taking to task some hapless representative of the now privatised Southern Water. The village had relied for its main sewerage on an 8-inch pipe installed just after the Second World War. This same pipe, 60-odd years later, was still expected to cope with the effluent of a greatly expanded village. The pipe had a flat spot, so that it didn't flow properly under gravity. In times of high rainfall, the water table rose and inundated the sewerage system through the many leaks that had developed. Residents in the low-lying centre of the village found themselves being revisited by excrement they thought they'd seen the last of when they'd pulled the chain. By way of remedy, Southern Water deployed a fleet of tankers at strategic points in St. Marybourne to pump out the excess sewage and transport it elsewhere. This operation cost well over £50,000 a week and in most years went on for months. If they are really stuck, they apply to the congenitally supine Environment Agency for permission to overpump. This is a euphemism for pouring gallons of sewage-polluted water into the Bourne rivulet, a tributary of the River Test, arguably the most iconic chalk stream in the world. What the villagers wanted was a new, fit-for-purpose sewer. What they got was sophisticated reasons for failure. Pity the poor water executives. Privatised life is so much more complicated. As the newly created water companies were bought and sold, often into remote overseas ownership, they were often laden with new debt, so-called gearing. Revenues diverted to repay that debt ensured that after a few years, the new owners effectively held a monopoly asset for free. Meanwhile, to ensure that executives were aligned with creating shareholder value, dividends and executive bonuses, they were paid on financial performance rather than inconvenient metrics such as proper sewage treatment and ensuring we didn't run out of water, triggering hosepipe bans. As usual, politicians of all stripe sloped their shoulders, claiming it was all down to the regulators. Well, yes, to a point. But by definition, all regulators suffer from being under-resourced. Inevitably, they rely on the industry for information when setting licences to operate. The seven-yearly licence dance consists of industry executives pleading poverty with the regulators. Whatever it is, acquiescing in the absence of any independent data. Once the deal is struck, it's trebled all round for the monopolies. In 1980s, there was a talk of national water grid and backup desalination plants in hard-to-reach areas. Talk, but no action. Water is a fundamental requirement in any society, as, dare I say it, is cheap energy. You can argue elsewhere about how to produce energy cleanly. So how to ensure the water companies prioritise correctly? For a start, now we're in drought, claw back and freeze all bonuses and dividends until supplies are future-proofed by proper investment. Sadly, it's the only language utility executives understand.
And now Daphne has got the editorial comment.
Yes, and that's headed Development at Bushfield Camp. Silver Hill has been a planning issue since Stagecoach contacted developers about the future of the bus station in 1987. But Bushfield Camp and the surrounding downland have been on the agenda for far longer. Ever since the military moved out in 1971, the use of the land has been up for discussion. In the 1980s, the owner, the church commissioners, supported a Tesco superstore, which never materialised. So the area gradually reverted to a semi-wild nature. In the late 1990s, the council proposed the downland as a country park, again to no avail. Then around 10 years ago, the former barracks portion was designated in the local plan for business use with relatively little opposition. It is that designation which the church commissioners and developers are seeking to use. Clearly, it is too late to stop the conversion of much of the site into a business park, but the future of the downland must go hand in hand with it. Most of the chalk downland around the city has gone under the plough. This is the chance to restore and nurture Bushfield Down. It should not be missed.
And now we have items of general news, starting with one read by Nick.
Yes, this piece is called Call for Sites in National Park, and it follows on from comments that were raised in the questions earlier about what the South Downs National Park initiative currently is. The South Downs National Park Authority, which stretches to Winchester, is asking residents, landowners and developers to put forward sites for development. A call for sites has been launched as the Park Authority undertakes a review of its local plan. Potential sites can be put forward for housing, economic developments, renewable energy, gypsy and traveller sites, and biodiversity net gain. The call comes as the National Park is considering an application for the Boomtown Fair event to be granted permanent permission. At Chesford Head, it lies within the National Park. Countryside campaigners and parish councils are opposing the proposal. Lucy Howard, planning policy manager for the National Park Authority, said, "We're launching our call for sites as part of the local plan review, which government requires us to do every 5 years. It's important to say this is not just about housing. We're asking people to put forward sites for a whole range of uses. Just because a site is put forward does not mean it will be allocated. And, of course, the landscape will always come first in our appraisal. It's crucial we keep the local plan up to date. Otherwise, the National Park would be more vulnerable to speculative developments that haven't been properly consulted on. This will be a review rather than a brand new plan, and we'll be keeping our award-winning landscape-led approach. We're working very closely with the parish and town councils across the National Park, as well as other key partners, to look for new development sites to meet local needs without adversely impacting on the landscape of the National Park. The Countryside Charity, previously known as Campaign to Protect Rural England, CPRE, is one of the longest running environmental groups in the UK. Commenting on the call for sites, Paul Miner, head of policy and planning at CPRE, said, "We would strongly support the call for nominations of local green space designation. Major development should only take place within the boundary of the park in exceptional circumstances. The South Downs faces major challenges in terms of affordable housing, and we would support small-scale, well-designed, community-led schemes to meet that need, provided they don't compromise the key national park purposes of conservation or public enjoyment." And that is accompanied by a picture which you wouldn't expect for the South Downs National Park. But it's a bit of green ground very close to a housing estate, by the looks of it, with people walking and cycling in it.
This article seems to be based on various comments which have reached the Hampshire Chronicle regarding the Boomtown Festival, which divides local opinion. Boomtown has been dividing opinion online. More than 70,000 people were on site at Matterley Estate near Winchester for the festival, which finished on Sunday. The Hampshire Chronicle stories had attracted dozens of comments, some in favour of the event and others against. Winston Smith Jr. complained that the event is a symbol of the decline of Winchester. It would appear everything is back to business as usual. Station Approach, Boomtown, Bushfield Camp and others. All the efforts by Winchester people to resist these encroachments have come to naught. It's like the barbarians at the gate. They may be repelled, but only temporarily. Rest assured there will be a new onslaught as before. And so it will go on. Winchester really does need a new approach, pardon the pun, rather than this outdated and permanent adversarial contest between the people and the powers that be. But Old Gorion countered, "You seem to assume that all development and change is bad, and you characterise what I would describe as a moribund negativity as resistance, as if it is something noble. Perhaps you and other regular keyboard warriors on this site should leave the keyboard and engage with the change process and influence rather than resist, even before details are known. I and many others don't want Winchester to be a museum. I want a vibrant modern city that evolves as new opportunities present." Some posters were saying that Boomtown brings extra trade, while others say the city avoids the customer, as festival goers arriving by train are bused direct to the site off Alsford Road near Mourne Hill. The issue of the festival within the South Downs National Park having permanent position is also controversial. Cheriton resident posted, "Unfortunately, many people do not appreciate that the statutory purposes of a national park include to conserve and enhance the natural beauty, wildlife, and cultural heritage of the area. These are enshrined in law. As construction work started in early July and the site will not be cleared until early September, 9 weeks is allowed for this in the temporary planning permission, which expires on the 31st of December 2024, nobody could claim that the natural beauty around the Chesford Head viewpoint is either conserved or enhanced. Nobody knows about the impacts on the wildlife, because proper ecological monitoring has not been taking place, despite planning conditions which require this to be done. The impacts are not merely for 5 or 6 days. People who like attending this and other festivals, of whom there are many thousands, think that objectors want to stop Boomtown. This is not so. We want to stop it taking place in a national park. If it were to relocate to a site west or north of Winchester, outside the South Downs National Park, I would support its continuation."
And now a final Boomtown item, and it's headed, "Clear up operation starts at festival site." A huge clean-up operation is underway in the wake of a Winchester music festival. Boomtown Fair's latest instalment, Chapter 1, The Gathering, has just finished after welcoming 66,000 people to the Matterley Bowl in the South Downs National Park for a 5-day celebration, which showcased over 500 artists from across the world. Scores of revellers made their way home on Monday morning, having been at the event since Wednesday, August the 10th, leaving a sizeable amount of mess in their wake. Crews could be seen deconstructing the stages from the top of Chesford Head, while a large amount of rubbish lay strewn across the beauty spot. Plenty of tents have also been abandoned by partygoers, who ignored the festival's pleas to pack them up and take them home. Organisers have said they will provide an update on the exact number of tents left behind when the operation is complete, but there did seem to be fewer than in previous years when the Chronicle visited the site on Tuesday. Speaking ahead of the festival, Sustainability Coordinator Emily Ford said, "We've made a commitment to become a circular festival by 2025 to transform Boomtown into a festival where we eliminate waste, circulate resources, and adopt low-carbon and resource-efficient systems and actions. We've already implemented so many changes that put us well on the way to achieve this goal. We participate in a Greener Festival Award, who externally assess our commitment towards sustainability. And we received the Commended Award, 2 out of 4 stars, in 2019, which signifies a well-managed, environmentally aware festival. As Boomtown has grown in size over the years, we are aware of our environmental impact and understand that festivals can be carbon and waste intensive. But they can also provide the best testing ground for collaboration, creativity, and innovation. With so many opportunities to reduce our impact, we have a responsibility to do all we can. In recent years, we've already seen huge changes in the way people create their festival experience. After seeing such a reduction in waste and an increase in people taking their tents home, we can see that Boomtown citizens really do share our vision of circularity and are excited to work with us on achieving it."
And now we move away from Boomtown to preparations for newspaper's 250th anniversary. Plans are in place for a month-long celebration to mark 250 years of the Hampshire Chronicle. The newspaper, which has been printed continuously since August the 24th, 1772, will host a series of promotions, an open day, and a VIP party. There will be opportunities to get free cupcakes and free products, as well as Hampshire Chronicle branded merchandise. There will also be competitions to win £250 of vouchers, plus money-off coupons for businesses in the city that have been part of the Hampshire Chronicle's history. Readers are also being invited to meet the team at a special open event at the Hampshire Chronicle's office in Upper Brook Street in Winchester on September the 15th. The office doors will be open between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. and readers will be able to quiz the editor, chat to reporters, see the newsroom, and browse select historic archives. Editor Kimberly Barber said, "I am looking forward to meeting readers and to marking this historic moment. I am proud to be in charge of one of the country's oldest and most respected local newspapers. The whole team hopes that everyone will be able to enjoy and celebrate with us." A VIP party will then be held at the Cabinet Rooms in Jury Street, where a gallery of Winchester photos taken by photographer Stuart Martin will be on display and then auctioned off for charity. The photos will be on display from September the 15th until September the 22nd, with people able to leave bids at the Cabinet Rooms or its nominated charity. an 8-page supplement will be published in the Hampshire Chronicle to round off the celebrations on September the 22nd. If you'd like to get involved with the Hampshire Chronicle celebrations, email kimberly.barber@newsquest.co.uk or call 01962 860 836. So that's Kimberly.barber, spelt Kimberley, dot barber, spelt Barber, at newsquest.co.uk, or calling them on 01962 860 836. And there's a photo there of four of their reporters poring over some of the historic scrapbooks.
This is an important article for dog owners. A Winchester vet has been speaking up about the danger of leaving dogs in cars and walking them in hot weather. Vet Danny Chambers was on GB News on Sunday, August the 7th. In conversation with newscaster Alistair Stewart, he warned against walking dogs during the heat wave. Danny said, "My main message to dog owners this week is that no dog has ever died from missing a walk, but many dogs have died as a result of being exercised in hot weather. Dogs really struggle in the heat because they cannot sweat, so they cool themselves down by panting. Also, it's really important to remind people that dogs die quickly in hot cars, even if they're only left for a few minutes. Also, leaving windows open slightly does not make any difference to the internal temperature of the car. 10 times as many dogs seen by vets in the summer are as a result of heat stroke after being exercised in hot weather rather than being entrapped in a car. If a dog is collapsed from heat stroke, you should bring it inside into a shady, well-ventilated, cool room, then call your local vet and follow their instructions. Also, you can cool your dog down by pouring cool to lukewarm water on them and giving them a small drink of cool water. Don't allow them to lap up huge quantities at once in case they vomit. Finally, if you travel to the vet, travel in a cold, air-conditioned car."
And now an item on tributes to Ron Allison. Warm tributes were paid to the Queen's former press secretary, Ron Allison, at his Thanksgiving service. They included the Queen, for whom Chronicle columnist Ron worked in the 1970s. The monarch wrote Ron's widow Jennifer, "I was so very sorry to learn of Ron's death. I greatly valued his service to me and members of my family whilst he was press secretary, and send you and members of his family my heartfelt condolences in your great loss." More than 200 people attended the service at St Cross Chapel. Ron, who started his journalism career as a junior reporter on the Chronicle in the 1950s, died on July the 26th, aged 90. Paying tribute, John Dorth, who worked in the Buckingham Palace press office with Ron, said, "I know from my own personal experience how much the royal family valued Ron's clear, calm and sensible advice and support, including, I remember once, during the astonishing Silver Jubilee year, telling the Queen that it would help a lot if she smiled a bit more. Something like so much else she has become remarkably adept at doing." Mr. Dorth added, "Hugo Vickers, the great royal writer with us today, has written an excellent obituary in The Telegraph, one of many, and I commend it to you. He chronicles Ron's remarkable career through its many iterations, but my memories of him are not of his many achievements at the Palace, the BBC, ITV and elsewhere, My memories of him are of his kindness, calmness and unfailing support. I will always be grateful for that.
The social media app promoters in City High Street. Promoters of a new social media app took their campaign to Winchester High Street. Azar set up a DJ booth in an ex-military truck painted a striking mint green outside the former Debenham store. To the background of pulsing house music, Azar workers engaged with passers-by to raise the app's profile. They signed up around 300 new subscribers, but had hoped for 900. One said if they returned to Winchester, they would be further up the high street, with more young people around. Since the COVID-19 pandemic, socialising online has skyrocketed. Created in 2014, Azar, spelled A-Z-A-R, has grown to be one of the top apps for video chatting and meeting new people online. Their stands had QR codes leading passers-by to the app store from their phones. Designed in Korea, Azar users are able to communicate with anyone on the platform, with the ability to create performances which allow users to personalise their experience, the content and the people that they want to be seen. And there's a picture of the former military vehicle, it certainly looks like one, painted in the a wonderful mint green with all guns blazing by the looks of it outside the Debenham store in Winchester High Street.
This article is about a national accolade for Long Barn for its lavender. Long Barn in Alsford has been awarded national collection status by Plant Heritage for its unique collection of lavenders. The aim of a national collection is to preserve rare plant varieties of a historical importance so that they don't become lost to cultivation. The Long Barn grows varieties like Lavender Intermedia, which used to be commercially farmed but have become less popular in recent years. The Long Barn team are dedicated to protecting these scarcer varieties. Unlike many other garden plants, the lavender at Long Barn has been thriving in the Mediterranean-like conditions this summer. Richard Norris, director and grower there, believes that lavender and other Mediterranean plants could be the key to more sustainable gardening. He said, "Apart from when we first plant the lavender, we never water it here in Long Barn, where we garden on free-draining chalk. Water shortages are in the news, and many Mediterranean plants simply don't need to be watered. These are perhaps what we should all be considering for the future." Long Barn has been cultivating rare varieties of lavender for over 15 years. Visitors can stroll through the 5,000 lavender plants. Some of it is made into Long Barn's own collection of products available in the shop, including soap, hand cream, candles and perfume.
And this item is headed School Uniform Vouchers. A mobile tyre company based in Winchester has launched a School Uniform on Us promotion, offering vouchers for school uniform with tyre purchases. Families are feeling the financial burden due to rising prices, so one business, based in Coldon Common, is doing what they can to help lessen the economic blow. Leighton's Mobile Tyres announced on Facebook that they'll be supplying school uniform vouchers with certain Falcon tyre purchases throughout August. The tyre dealer and repair shop that covers Winchester and surrounding areas is providing £15 for two tyres and £30 for four tyres to use towards school uniform. Company owner Tom Leighton chose the promotion as he thought it would be more useful than the ordinary monthly discount vouchers they offer. Tom, 35, said, "Having young kids myself, we all know how expensive school uniform can be, and the promotion has received quite a lot of love already. With the rising costs of everything, I've noticed that some people who need tyres aren't doing so, or are only buying the minimum because other costs like school uniform take priority. So this is helping people get more of what they need, because the way things are going, it doesn't look like the crisis is going to get any better, which is quite worrying." The tyre fitter from Eastleigh is hoping the promotion will help families who are feeling the pinch amid the economic crisis. The offer applies to online purchases for Falcon Tyres using the valid discount code SCHOOLFA. Leighton's Mobile Tyres operates in Compton, Coldon Common, Hursley, Mitchell-Dever, Osbury, Shawford, South Wanston, Sutton Scotney, Twyford and Winchester. And it's illustrated by two pictures, one of a Leighton's Mobile Tyres van, and then alongside it, their offer on a chalkboard, because it's for school uniform, giving details of the offer and the code.
Display of solidarity at Winchester event. Guests from Afghanistan, Ukraine and Syria gathered at the Ark on August the 6th in what was a powerful display of solidarity from the city's residents displaced by conflict. People who have fled various war zones swapped stories and experiences in hope of helping each other settle in their new environment. The event, which was organised by the Winchester Muslim Cultural Association in tandem with Winchester Rotary and Winchester City of Sanctuary, saw a collection of speakers address crowds. Members of the Syrian community provided guests with food from their homeland, giving them a chance to sample some of Syria's cuisine. Mifkayam, member of both the Muslim Cultural Association and Winchester Rotary, said, "In our Muslim community, we have lots of people from Syria and Afghanistan, so they've had similar kinds of experiences in terms of fleeing a war-torn country and settling in a new part of the world with a different language, custom and culture. So we thought that they could support each other." The Syrian community were very keen to share their experience and learning to help Ukrainians arriving in Winchester. "It has turned into a wonderful cultural display for the Ukrainians. It is really touching. I spoke to one lady who was almost in tears during the performances, and it really drives it home that they left their husbands, families and entire livelihood to come here. But an opportunity like this, where they can express themselves and feel valued in a wider community, is very important for both sides. And so many organisations have worked together in unison to make that happen. Winchester Rotary has been helping support various aid efforts since the war in Ukraine began. As more Ukrainians arrive in Winchester, it is also planning further events to help them feel at home in their new surroundings. Later this month, the Rotary Club is taking a group of Ukrainian mothers and their children on a day trip to Marwell Zoo." Fellow Rotary Club member Jill Russell said, "These people are so homesick and we know they don't really want to be here. But at the same time, they're so grateful for all the help they're getting. It's a wonderful thing that our guests from Syria and Afghanistan are willing to share and want to help. We're hoping today will give us a better idea of what people need from us, so we as organisations can support this process as best we can. And the photo accompanying that article is of the Kalina Choir singing at the Arg on that rather special day.
Plaque in memory of astronomer. A plaque in memory of a well-known astronomer is set to be unveiled on a house in Winchester. It will be in memory of Alfred Curtis at a property in Stony Lane, Week, where he had his own observatory in the back garden. The plaque will be unveiled on Friday, August the 26th at 3 p.m. Mr. Curtis lived at the property from 1936 to 1976. The observatory was known as the NAF, and he conducted research from it as a founder member of the Southampton Astronomical Society. He was also awarded a fellowship of the Royal Astronomical Society for his research. Sir Patrick Moore was a friend and regular visitor to Stony Lane from his home in Selsey. Malcolm Perrins currently lives in the house and commissioned the plaque. He said, "My wife and I think it is important that his achievements are recorded for posterity, and we have commissioned a blue plaque that will be unveiled by John Glasgow. John was a close friend of Alfred and his daughter Myra. The unveiling will also be attended by Dr. Lillian Hobbs and her brother Michael Hobbs, representing the Southampton Astronomical Society." Mr. Curtis was born in Portsmouth in 1901 and moved to Winchester when he was 10 and developed an early interest in astronomy. He joined the British Astronomical Association in 1920 and went on to publish a paper on lunar craters. He joined the Southampton Astronomical Society in 1924, shortly after its formation. At the time of the Society's 50th anniversary, he was one of the only founding members still fully active in astronomy. And he was president of the Society until his death in 1976. In the 1960s and 70s, Mr. Curtis helped to organise Winchester Weekend courses in observational astronomy. The course increased in popularity, with participants rising from 56 in 1967 to 242 in 1976. And there is a small picture with this article. There is inset the plaque, and the main picture shows Mr. Curtis outside his observatory, which looks, well, difficult to describe. It looks a bit like one of those Mongolian yurt tents, but I'm sure it's much more substantial than that.
Free gym membership for refugees blocked. A Winchester gym is offering a free membership for all refugees living in the city. Energy Fitness, based above the Brooks Shopping Centre, is giving free access for all Ukrainian refugees over a three-month period. In a bid to promote the offer, the gym has been blocked by Winchester City Council, who are said to be in a contractual agreement with another Winchester gym. Local MP Steve Brine dropped into Energy Fitness on Friday, July the 29th, to help promote the offer. In a lengthy Facebook post, Mr. Brine mentioned that the gym had been blocked from promoting the offer at Winchester City Council's weekly hub because the authority says it would breach their contractual agreement with everyone active who operate the new leisure centre at Bar End. He said, "Energy have made a generous and thoughtful offer, so it's extremely disappointing they are not being helped by the council, as they might, by what looks like a really unfortunate conflict of interest. The city council might wish to think again and stand with an independently owned local business trying to do the right thing." In response to Mr. Brine's statement, Winchester City Council said, "Winchester City Council continues to host its Ukrainian hubs that support both citizens and hosts as they settle into Winchester. The council does not manage the support given by external businesses, so all activities and offers are collated and listed on the City of Sanctuary website, making it easily accessible and all in one place for our Ukrainian guests. Mimi Simmons, manager at Energy Fitness, said, "We responded to a call from Winchester Bid for local businesses to help Ukrainian refugees coming into Winchester and felt Energy Fitness could offer them a fantastic opportunity to aid their physical and mental well-being while they're here. We feel the City Council unfairly blocked a service we were offering our guests because of their relationship with the existing leisure centre operator. I strongly disagree with this and can't understand why competition and politics is being taken into the debate of refugees' health and well-being. We are quite happy to attend alongside everybody active and feel very disappointed that our own council are unwilling to help promote this free service in order to benefit their own alliances."
A woman killed after trying to save her puppy. A former Page 3 model was killed when her puppy leapt from a car she was travelling in, and she ran into the road to save it, an inquest heard. Linda Mann, 55, whose dogs were her life, was hit by an SUV after running out onto a dual carriageway in a desperate bid to rescue her pet. She had been in a car driven by her son when they pulled into a lay-by at 10 p.m. and the Staffordshire Bull Terrier puppy jumped from her lap. The inquest heard that on the unlit road, the driver of the oncoming Mazda CX-3 would have needed at least 3 or 4 seconds to take evasive action, but had only one. The SUV struck both her and the dog, and they both died at the scene, on the A303 near Bullington Cross. Winchester Coroner's Court heard that Miss Mann's son, Antonio Barber, had pulled over in the lay-by as he thought his mother, who had been drinking, was going to be sick. Senior Coroner Christopher Wilkinson said, "Miss Mann was the passenger in the car travelling with her puppy on her lap. It appears the puppy leapt from the window or through the door when it opened. Recording a conclusion of accidental death by road traffic accident, Mr. Wilkinson said, "Her love for people and desire to help was reflected in the very last seconds of her life as she tried to save her puppy."
Winchester Theatre Arts Annual Show. Around 150 youngsters from Winchester Theatre Arts have taken to the stage to perform Alice in Wonderland at Eastleigh's Rose Theatre. It's the first time the school have been able to perform in more than 2 years, with the pandemic disrupting the usually annual event. Winchester Theatre Arts has provided singing, dancing and acting lessons for 45 years, with many taking part in its base at the Jubilee Hall in King's Worthy. Thousands of youngsters from the Worthies and beyond have passed through its doors, and several have taken up performing arts careers, including on the West End stage. Others still support the organisation by helping backstage at the shows. Winchester Theatre Art performances have become known for their colourful costumes, great choreography and abundance of talent, and this year's extravaganza was no different. The performances had taken many hours of rehearsals and months of preparation by the team of volunteers and teachers, especially director, scriptwriter and choreographer Laura Goodwin. This was the 10th show for Erin Neal, who played Alice, and it was the last show for a number of the students before heading off to university. Freya Murchison, who played the Mad Hatter, said, "This year is my 13th and final show. It has been an absolute blast rehearsing with this cast. We've all had so much fun every step of the way. I can't begin to thank everyone enough for the last 13 years. I am beyond grateful for the experiences I've had and the friends I've made. Oliver Gittins, who took on the role of the March Hare, said, I do tap and jazz, and I really enjoy these as I love dance, and it helps me to express myself. I'm so proud of everyone, as we have all come so far in only a couple of months. Winchester Theatre Arts has given me a family and place where I can be myself. Alice in Wonderland finished with a rendition of ABBA's Thank You for the Music, a tradition that's been held since the school started, and an emotional moment for those taking part and family members in the audience. Early this year, members of the Winchester Theatre Arts School put on an evening of song and dance from the musicals, which raised over £2,000 for the people of Ukraine. This is accompanied by a picture of the young people, arms in the air, waving, and obviously having a marvellous time giving their performance.
And now another letter from the Queen, and it's headed Recognition from the Queen for Duck Table. A local celebrity has been praised by the Queen for her dedicated work caring for the water birds in Alresford in response to a letter on Amy's duck food table and the recent swan killings. Amy Barnum and her work with the birds was mentioned by the Queen in a letter responding to Amy's duck food table supporter, Chloe Lord. On July the 29th, Chloe received a letter from Windsor Castle. The letter, dated July the 22nd, addressed from the lady-in-waiting, read, The Queen was interested to hear about Amy's dedicated work caring for the water birds of Alresford and the food table she has created for the appreciative ducks and swans, but Her Majesty was sad to learn that two of the local swans have recently been shot. Bob Barnum and his daughter Amy of the Dean Alresford set up the duck food table 3 years ago to provide Amy with a purpose, combat her learning difficulties, and offer a safer and healthier alternative to feed the local water birds. Amy, 26, has significant learning difficulties and uncontrolled epilepsy caused by a form of brain damage. Amy's father said, I am literally speechless about it. It was really hard to comprehend that it was real, that the Queen had actually been told about Amy's table and she was interested and sent her commiserations about the dead swans. It was just like, wow, I can't really fathom it. Bob came up with the idea of the table when college at a specialist unit came to an end for his daughter and she needed a new routine. He said, Amy loves feeding the ducks and I really want to give her as normal and fulfilled life as I possibly can. I want her to be able to access something like we all do. She'll never work, and she's always loved going down to the river and feeding the ducks and swans. She adores swans. So at the weekend, we make up healthy duck food and take it down to a little camping table we put out there. I created her this job, basically. It went from 15 bags a weekend to around 800 bags a week, as it's that popular, particularly during the school holidays. She has since become a bit of a local celebrity within the Alresford area, getting up every morning to do her job despite having several seizures throughout the night. Bob continued, It's helped Amy with her cognitive thinking and communication. She meets so many people at the river. Also, from a physio point of view, she carries varying weights of the box and bags, so it's helping her physically as well. She walks much better than she used to. She's happier. It's had a massive impact on her. For me, as dad, I'm just so happy that it's worked out for her. She's my inspiration. She inspires me every single day with everything she goes through in the night and still gets up in the morning and wants to do her job. Without day services to take care of Amy, Bob had to leave his job of 18 years as a maintenance technician behind him. The table includes duck-friendly food, notices from the Wildlife Trust and British Waterways, as well as a donations pot for people to fund the food purchases. The swans that were shot by the river in May were two of Amy's favourites. Bob said she had an incredible relationship with the male swan. He was really grumpy with everyone and dogs, but with Amy he was calm and he would stand and bow his head to her. Everybody knew about this relationship, so when he was shot, everyone crowded around her and wanted to know she was okay and sent cards and presents. I think that was the motivation for Chloe to write to the Queen, because it was a big thing locally. So getting a response has definitely lifted the mood.
And that's all we have for you this week. Please return the memory stick in the plastic wallet as soon as you've finished with it. And I've got to make a short announcement about Royal Mail. They've announced dates for their forthcoming strikes, and the first is on the 26th of August. So distribution of the recordings from the 26th onwards might be affected by the strike, and you may not receive your wallets in the usual timely manner. We will, of course, do our best to deliver them into the Postal Service at the earliest opportunity. Thanks to this week's editors and to all the other volunteers who prepare, copy and dispatch our recordings to you. And it's goodbye from us, Daphne.
Goodbye.
Nick.
Goodbye.
Frieda.
Goodbye.
And me, Noel Thorpe-Tracy. I hope you stay safe and well. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.